today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
So really just creating an energy with among us of just happiness and love. And I'm not stressed out. Your kid is screaming his head off, but that's okay because we're going to play over here for a minute while you handle that. And don't worry, it is perfectly fine. And just really creating an environment where they can be themselves.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, where each week we interview the world's most interesting photographers to learn what it really takes to capture beautiful images and compelling stories so that you can start to do the same. Today, we have an interview from the Beginner Photography Podcast Vault. You know, after years of interviewing world-class photographers, we have built up an incredibly rich library of photography tips and tricks that guests share to help you to get better at capturing amazing images. Now, with new listeners finding the show every day, these rewind interviews allow new listeners to discover those gold nuggets of information of the past and also allow longtime listeners to revisit and hear an interview with fresh ears and more hands-on experience to draw from. So in today's Beginner Photography Podcast Rewind, we are hearing from family photographer Sarah Blanco. When I interviewed her originally in episode 194, where she shares the importance that light plays in her family photography, and obviously how you can create a relaxed mood for families to break down their walls and have some fun. So with that, let's go ahead and get on into today's interview. Today's guest is Sarah Blanco, a family lifestyle photographer in San Antonio, Texas. Using natural light to create those little moments that mean everything to you. Her website says, "I wake up every day excited to meet new people and create images that they will carry for the rest of their lives." I love that philosophy. Today, I'm really excited to talk about creating more personal family photography. So, Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. As I mentioned, you are a family and lifestyle photographer in San Antonio. And I usually start off the podcast by just starting off with the beginning, right?
Okay.
Where did it start for you? I want to know how you got started in photography.
Well, it was a million years ago.
You look great for a million years old.
I try. I was 17 and I was working as a receptionist at a hair salon and loving the environment of being the greeter for people and meeting new people and getting to know new people. And I got the opportunity to start managing a studio. I basically was taking over the position for someone who was going on maternity leave. And so at 17, I started managing photography studios.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. But what I loved about that position was that, again, I was kind of thrown into it as the person that everybody saw, the first person that people talked to. I helped brides design their books. I helped moms order photographs. I did everything. So for me, my first introduction into photography was dealing with people and really like discovering my love for working with people and getting to know all kinds of different people. And that was I managed studios for about, I would say, two different studios, one 3 years, one 6 years. And then I started my business when I was 24, full time.
Wow. So
yeah.
had you had any like photography experience before you started as a greeter at the studio?
No.
None.
None.
It
was one of those fluke positions that it was a friend of a friend and they just kind of took a chance on this 17-year-old who I didn't go to college because I was really, really bad in school. And I knew for me, I think a lot of creatives are, the idea of going to college was like an overwhelming obstacle for me, whereas just working really, really hard doing something I love was the easy path.
Yeah.
So it's never been easy, like financially and all of that. It's always taken me a lot of work, but it's been fulfilling.
Good. So without having really like picked up that camera, you know, like a lot of photographer stories that, you know, they've had a camera in their hands since they were young, myself included, having been on the other side of that,
Yes.
Kind of falling into the business side, like, oh, this is, I work for a photography studio. And then having to learn photography.
Yes.
How did you educate yourself about photography? Because obviously it can be pretty technical.
Yes. Well, this was 20 years ago, so everybody was still film. So learning was actually a lot easier. I bought an old Nikon and just started practicing. Have my little Nikon FM2. I still have it. And I shot everything. The second photographer that I worked for, she actually taught me the photography side of it. I became her second shooter for weddings. And she was all film. She still is all film. So everything that we did was film. And it was learning by doing. Mm-hmm. I learned the technical. I learned just the creative side from her. I learned how to see light. I learned how to interact with people. Learned how to make people feel comfortable around me, which I had already pretty much learned because my job was to be the face of these businesses.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I mean, it was just a lot of years of just learning by doing.
So, like you, I also started shooting on film, and I know that like you didn't have that instant gratification to see exactly the changes that you were making. So, how did you know that the decisions that you were making were right? Like, was there some sort of review process after you shot a role?
Just kind of finding what I liked, like the kind of light that I liked. I did a lot as a second shooter. I did a lot of black and whites for her. So we would do, 3200 speed, all natural light and a dark reception and just kind of seeing what we got. I don't know. She would review my images. She would kind of show me what she liked about what I was doing. But then at the end, it was really more like what I liked, what finding my voice. It was expensive, film is pricey. So I would have to be very selective. I would have to know exactly what I wanted to take before I took it. And just years of kind of doing that.
I want to get back to what it was like experimenting with film, because like you said, it can be expensive. It can be a hard thing. Can you get back into that headspace? And was there anything that you found to be extremely challenging for you to understand? And was there a moment that you kind of had this aha where it kind of all came together?
Like specifically when photographing or with photographing like a certain subject or...
I suppose just learning how a camera works, because I think a lot of people get wrapped up in that, right? They don't understand how aperture affects, or I guess, aperture is pretty easy to see visually, but, they don't understand how like everything works together. And now more than ever, we can see that instant like feedback, right?
Right.
When it was back in those days of film, I want to know a deeper understanding of what challenges it was that that you faced. Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
My biggest challenge was learning light. Like that is what took me the longest to learn, like learning how to shoot and learning what I liked to shoot, like learning, I guess it's for with film, it was so different because you would, your ISO didn't change. You would put your film in, that was your ISO. And so really it was just a matter of, I like a really open aperture.
Yeah.
I told you I'm not technical. So I knew, like, I always wanted to shoot everything at like 1/8. Uh-huh. And so it was really just a matter of changing my shutter speed. Like, it was, I took to photography in a very simple, easy way. I learn very simply, like, give me the easiest explanation, and that is what I'm going to go with. So I didn't really have a hard time understanding how the camera worked. Like, I just kind of understood that it was all connected, right? Yeah. Your ISO, your aperture, your shutter speed, you just had to kind of figure out how all that was going to work where you were. If I was inside, it would be, you know, 1/8 at what, you know what I mean? It just, mm-hmm. I guess I didn't really have a hard time understanding that concept.
Would you say that it was because of the amount of practice that you put in behind the camera?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just having a professional photographer who shot 100% film being like, Sarah, it's not that hard. Just like, this is it. You know, when I switched to digital, then it became a little bit different. And then there was definitely a learning curve for me with digital, for sure.
Why is that? Can you expand on that?
With film, you never want to underexpose, right? Like, if you underexpose, you've ruined your image. You can overexpose a full stop and still have a great image. And we would actually, we liked kind of that brighter area look back then with film. And so we would overexpose everything. Then going to digital, if you overexpose, you've lost half your information. Yeah. So it's just kind of a flip-flop way of looking at it. For me, digital is a lot harder.
That's interesting.
It's nice because you can see exactly what you're getting. You can, it's that instant gratification. You can shoot a million frames and not, you know, not feel bad about it. Like, you're not going to have to pay for that.
Oh my gosh, if I shot a million frames. to get out of remortgage my house.
Exactly. But like with digital, it's just, there's so much more in the back end. It's like, you got to put it all on your computer and you have to edit. And it just, there's so much more of a time commitment there that I think it ends up evening out. Like, the time we spend with digital, it evens out financially with what we would spend on film.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. And I think that is something that a lot of people don't think of. But, you know, just looking at the, you know, your bank account, you think, oh, digital is much cheaper. But the time in the back end is, it's not quick. But
it's not quick.
So lighting is obviously something that it takes a long time to see. You know, you could have hours and hours and hours of just talking about seeing light, right?
Yeah.
And you kind of touched on that a little bit, but now I kind of want to talk about composition. Composition is something that doesn't get taught very often, I think. It doesn't really come up a lot in conversation because it's not super technical. It's not, if you're in this situation, this is what you do. If you're in this situation, this is what you do. It's a lot of it is up to you, the photographer. Right. But in the early days, after learning those technical abilities, next is the light in the composition. So how did you go through the process of figuring out what style of, like, where you like to hold the camera?
Right. Well, when I was second shooting weddings, it was a lot of what she wanted me to do. So it was standing where she needed me to be, capturing what she needed. Once I started really shooting for myself, I kind of did everything differently than she preferred. And I don't know if it was because I just had a different style, but I don't know. I would just play. When you're photographing a child, what do you want to see with that child? You want to see everything. You want to remember everything. You want to remember, one of my very favorite first images that I took was of my niece, and she was 2 years old, completely insane, like the most hyper child you have ever met.
I would challenge you, but okay, I get it.
she was fire all the time. And so I loved photographing her because she challenged me challenged everybody with whatever they said, but with me especially, because she knew I was trying so hard to like practice photography, and she would just take off running. And so one of my very favorite images that I took of her, I was trying to get a portrait of her looking up at me. And so I had my camera and she ran past me and looked up. And it was, I somehow got it in focus at the perfect time when she was looking up at me. And it just, that whole little series that I did of her was one of my favorites. It was her standing on her tiptoes, looking up at a, like touching a gate. It was her hands. It was her. So I kind of just played with a million different angles that told a story about that 10 minutes we spent in her front yard. So it was the ground is the background, the fence is the background, her feet, her hands. And so just getting, you know, a million different compositions and ways of photographing her that really told a story. So I think that at the end of the day, that's all I'm trying to do is tell a story.
I was like, right as you kind of started your explanation, I think I picked up on that, right?
Is
that that answer was much less technical and it was much more emotion driven. And I like that, because I was thinking about this while I was going over your work before I reached out. I thought, looking at your photos, there's a lot of there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of play with colors, which I love. So why don't you share right now, when you're photographing families, how do you create that emotion? How do you create that interaction between your families?
So a lot of it comes from just being a mother myself and knowing the effort that has gone into this family even meeting me. You know, there's convincing dad most of the time to show up and be happy about it. So for me, just being very, very present with my clients, talking to them beforehand about what the expectations are of me, what they want to see from me, the way that I work when I'm working with a family, kind of giving them a little bit of insight into what is going on in my mind while I'm shooting them.
So just making sure that they are prepared and that they understand that they're kind of along with you in this journey.
Yes, exactly. And also me, myself, you know, showing up ready and being vulnerable, being just 100% there for them. This isn't for me, this is for them. And so I'm an observer. I really like to watch people, watch the way that they interact, and it sounds kind of weird, but kind of read their energy. Like from the minute they get out of the car, you can tell how dad's feeling.
Oh yes, you sure can.
You can see how dad's feeling. You can you can hear kind of the frazzledness in mom's voice, trying to make everybody happy and just like make this all go smoothly. She's usually already apologizing for one of the children being in a mood or something. So for me to just show up and be like, immediately try to just make them happy. Mm-hmm. And like, this is going to be so fun. And let me tell you about this butterfly I saw in the field. And dad, how was that traffic? Are you doing okay? Like just trying to immediately break down their barriers without being like a force. You want to be a gentle force with your people, right? You want to let them be comfortable and let them be vulnerable. And how do you do that? You have to be that yourself first. So really just creating an energy with among us of just happiness and love. And I'm not stressed out. Your kid is screaming his head off, but that's okay, because we're going to play over here for a minute while you handle that. And don't worry, it is perfectly fine. And just really creating an environment where they can be themselves. I do give prompts. I do direct quite a bit. But really it's a direction, it's a prompt. And then it's stepping back to let them be normal, be themselves.
You know, what's interesting is a few years ago, I remember hearing the story of a doctor who was let go from a hospital because he had poor bedside manner. And I remember being young thinking like, that's not his job. Like he's a doctor. Like his job is to say, you have cancer, you know, sorry. You know what I mean? But as I've kind of went into business for myself and dealing directly with people, especially with that answer right there, that is so true. You know, especially because photography is much more of a service than it is a product, and making sure that people feel good and are comfortable is so important. So I love that you shared that. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
So you said that you work a little bit like with some prompts, and you work you work heavily to direct the type of photo that you are looking to get. So let me ask, what are you trying to get as a family photographer? What's that shot that you're trying to get? There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
Their life, their energy, their you know, every family has a certain language, right? We all kind of, we have a look that we give our partners. There's a way that we touch our children. So for me, it's not a image. It's not a particular, like, this is always what I'm aiming for because this is what I want on my website. That's never it for me. there's certain ways that we start. Like, we'll start by walking through the field, and then I'll have you stop and I'll ask dad to throw the youngest in the air while mom, you know, holds the older child, or just certain things like that. But really it's more of a, just a story. I'm looking to tell a story about your family, and however I can do that. So if it's a day at the park, if it's a morning in your home, if it's meeting a baby sister for the first time or something, it's just looking for the images that reflect that moment and how we all felt that day. You know what I mean?
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, for the past several years, I have paid for an expensive, far too expensive, album design software that I didn't even love because, well, there was no other choice, to be honest. And then one day, I got an email from CloudSpot, which is my client gallery system, announcing that they built an album builder into their gallery software. What? Now, myself or my clients can build a beautiful album and have it shipped right to them. And on top of all that, this feature is included for free. Now, after building a few albums to test it out, I canceled my expensive, dedicated album software membership right away, and I have not looked back. CloudSpot is built by photographers for photographers, and they listen to their customers to improve their service all the time. You can join the CloudSpot family by learning more and signing up over at deliverphotos.com today. You can even build albums with a free account. How awesome is that? So sign up now over at deliverphotos.com. Now, let's go ahead and get on back to today's interview. So then my next question, my follow-up question would be, how do you prepare for something like that? Because you can't just show up and, you know, you could, to some degree, you can show up, get a feel for who people are, and then go based on that. But do you have any sort of interaction or do you do any sort of like research before you show up with a family? Do you send out questionnaires or anything to better learn who they are?
I always like to do like a phone consultation with mom. But no, I'm not one of those people who is super, like I said, I'm not super technical. I'm not super organized in my mind. So if you send me a questionnaire 6 months before your session, there's a really good chance I'm going to forget to look at it before I go meet you.
Sure.
I'm just being honest. However, I do give my clients, like, I send a client guide, I give them styling suggestions, stuff like that. So they kind of know what to expect from me. As far as like researching a family, like, I wouldn't.
So maybe that was too strong of a word, but when you reach out and you have the phone, like, I'm not saying like go on and like stalk them and like see what they posted 10 years ago. But when you have that phone consultation, are there certain questions that you're asking to try to get a better idea of who that family is?
I'll kind of, you know, I'll ask about like the children, you know, there's, you know, and it's kind of funny because there's a certain energy that you can just immediately pick up on from a family. So like I will ask questions, I will get to know, but there are certain things that I'm just kind of anticipating. Mm-hmm. I'm anticipating the 6-year-old oldest girl to be not quite as adventurous as the second born. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna find her to be a little bit more serious, and she's gonna be a little bit more particular. She may not be as snuggly as her baby sister. So it's like, I think in doing this for so many years, there's just certain things that you kind of anticipate with a family, and then you learn how to kind of roll with the punches. If it's not exactly what you're anticipating, you can figure out really, really quickly what is going on, or who they are.
Yeah.
So I will talk a little bit to mom. I will ask her questions. I'll write down her children's names. I'll find out their ages, and we'll kind of chat a little bit. But really, a lot of it is me discovering who they are when I'm with them, because her child doesn't know anything about me, who I am. They don't know that I know anything about them either. So when I get to the session, I'm going to ask them questions, and then they're going to tell me who they are. And I think that just immediately creates a rapport between the two of us that mom couldn't give us. Like, that's something we have to find on our own.
I would imagine that if I was a young kid and I showed up and the stranger knew everything about me, it would be kind of strange. So I like that idea of asking the opening questions. But you mentioned there that you learn a lot of the stuff from doing it for years, your years of experience.
Yes.
Can you take me back to that first family session that you ever had on your own? Can you tell me about, like, how did you book that client as it being your first session? And were you nervous, and how did it turn out?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So I was, I was 24 when I went out on my own. My husband, we didn't have any money. This was, you know, 16 years ago. So, I'm really bad at math. It was 14
years ago.
Are we
the same person? Jeez. This is crazy.
14 years ago. So it was the very first client I booked when I was officially self-employed. She was a very busy working mom, an executive at a huge corporation here in town. I have no idea why she hired me.
I was just going to ask, how did this come about?
It was, again, a friend of a friend. Okay. And honestly, the way I'm a people person, I love people. I am not an introvert by any means. I just really love people. So I love networking, and not really necessarily like the official term networking. I would never go to like a networking party. That would give me anxiety, but just making friends in my community. And when you become friends with people, and when they genuinely know you, they feel comfortable referring their friends to you, even though you're a 24-year-old who has just started their own business and probably is not the best photographer there is, but they trust you because they know you. And so, anyways, it was a referral from a friend, and I walked into their beautiful, beautiful home, and it was kind of just trial by fire. It was learning really, really quickly how to create a space where they could be together, where I was kind of giving them directions, but also just capturing who they were as a family at home. And honestly, my first session with them was amazing, and I loved every minute of it. Again, it was all film. And so I took her proofs back to her, and she ordered through, you know, we just sat at her coffee table and ordered her prints or whatever. And she loved everything. And she was my very first client who trusted me to continue going on. 14 years later, I still photograph her family every year.
Wow, that's a great story. That's so awesome.
And it was truly just being present, being available, being a nice person, I think, gets you a long way. they want to give you a chance because they want to believe in you. They want to believe who you are. So just being nice was a really big part of it.
Is it, I don't know if they have any of those prints still hanging in their home, but interesting? They do. Is it interesting to go and like see like,
cringe, like, yeah.
What's the, chronological progression of your style. Growth as a photographer?
Oh yeah. A lot of times I'll kind of just do like a quick, like walk by. She has actually this huge hallway in her house where she hangs at least one or two images from every single session we've had.
Oh, I love that.
And it's like floor to ceiling prints.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy.
That is awesome. So
it is kind of cool.
Speaking of prints, something that a lot of new photographers struggle with. They don't know, you know, do you include them? Do you not include them? If you do, you know, what options do you give? Can you kind of walk me through your process of either how you started or what you wish that you would have done differently?
I started on film. So it was, everything was in-person sales after the fact, and they would have to order prints through me. That has changed. Now I am all inclusive. So they have the digital images, they can print, they can do whatever they need to with them. I did not love in-person sales. I didn't like it at all. I have a lot of energy. So sitting still for me is, you can tell, like I haven't stopped moving my hands. Sitting still and trying to help someone organize where their photographs are going to go in their house, like I have a really hard time with that. Mm-hmm. So I knew pretty quickly that was not really my jam. When I switched to digital, I switched to all-inclusive pretty quickly.
Okay, so what advice would you give to those who are starting with prints? Like, do you think that it's something that is necessary for family photography?
I don't think there's black and white. I mean, it's you can do whatever the hell you want. Yep. I have a lot of photographer friends who still do in-person sales and they have studios, and that is kind of the way that they have everything set up. You know, someone comes into their studio, they look at their albums, they order canvases, and they make a lot of on sales. Mm-hmm. Like that is the majority of their income is sales. And so I think that's great and fantastic. And if I had maybe a studio space and I could hire someone to sell for me, I maybe would. It's a lot of it is just knowing who you are and what you want to do. Try in-person sales. If you don't like it, go to all-inclusive and maybe, you know, give a couple of options with all-inclusive. Do you want to include everything or do you want to include everything plus prints, mm-hmm. plus a book? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So just to clarify, when you say all-inclusive, you mean that you are giving the digital files or are you including prints as well in those packages?
No, just prints. The files.
Gotcha.
No prints.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. So let's move on. You do some mentoring for other photographers.
Yes.
I want to ask, what is a common problem that you see photographers making who are not booking sessions?
Oh, there are so many. Oh, perfect. There are so many things. Number one, the photography industry right now is so focused on popularity within the industry. Doesn't make any difference to your clients who are paying you money if, you know, 5,000 other photographers follow you on Instagram. The people who are hiring you don't care. So stop putting so much focus on impressing other photographers. I sound really mean when I say that.
No, not at all.
Okay. So it's just a lot of pressure put on who you are online. Like, it doesn't matter. Be a real person in real life and connect with clients, connect with people in your community in person, and let them get to know who you are in person and create real relationships with them that last through the years. What happens when you are creating a real relationship with a client is they feel seen by you. They feel cared for by you, and they will send you to every other friend they have. They will want their friends to use you because they will want their friends to have that experience. So by focusing on your business, by focusing on your real life clients, you are, number one, you're not wasting a million hours a day on Instagram. Instead, you can focus on marketing to people in your community. That's my number one advice.
I love that. That is so, like, I don't want to say old school, but it's so like going against, like you said, what everybody's doing right now. There's that push, you know, if you're liked by photographers, who cares? They're not the ones, you know, paying your
bills. They will not pay you. Yeah. They might hire you for a mentoring session, but if you're charging what it takes to earn a living, there's a good chance that they won't hire you.
Right.
And that's the other thing is photographers are not charging their worth. They are, it's like basement bargain prices for photographers, especially new photographers coming in. They want business, they want work, and so they're not charging. And what is going to happen to them is they're going to burn out. They are not going to have a long-lasting career because nobody can do a session for $300-$400 and earn a living. If you do, then you're going to have to do so many sessions that you're going to be so exhausted. You're going to have no family time, no personal life whatsoever, and you're going to hate your job.
So then how do they know what their worth is and when to start charging for it?
If people want to book you, charge them. You know, if people are starting to ask what your pricing is, you put your price out there. And I always recommend starting a little bit higher than what you think you're probably worth. You know, if you feel like you're worth, if your work is worth a $400 session, price it at $600 and see what happens. Because if you price yourself at $400, then you're going to be getting the people who are looking for a deal. If you price yourself higher, you're going to be finding people that want to invest, and they want to invest in the experience altogether. The other thing that happens if you're trying to build relationships with clients who are paying a very low rate, when you do get to the point where you have to raise, you're going to lose them.
Yeah.
So it's just it's kind of a minefield. A little bit. It's a lot of trying and seeing what is working and then reevaluating.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Absolutely makes sense. Somebody in the group right now is going through this thing. Her name is Carrie. She's been in the group for a very long time, and it's been great to see her growth as a photographer, right? Just like seeing her from the beginning and then now seeing where she is. Her son is going to prom.
Oh, wow.
So they got a bunch of people, you know, asking. She's now known as the photographer in the community.
Yeah.
And she's been stressing out over, you know, charging $10 per person. And mm-hmm. I think everybody in the group has.
No, ma'am.
Right. You know, it, like you said, it's charging your worth, knowing what your worth is. And I think anybody's worth is worth more than $10. And like you said, if you price yourself higher than if you price yourself where you want to be, you're going to attract the clients that you want to attract and not have to worry about alienating people when you go from $10 to $50, you know, because that's quite
and,
a jump.
Yeah. And the other thing that's going to happen if Carrie does this for $10 a person, they are going to take advantage of her and they are not also going to appreciate her.
Right.
They are going to just take as much as they can from her because she is not setting a boundary. I'm all about boundaries. If you set a boundary up front, then people will respect you.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So now we've talked about where you got started. We talked a lot there about business. That was more than 15 minutes of business talk right there. And we were worried about that in the beginning.
I'm very passionate about business and photographers being able to create a sustainable income from their business. If you are spending the majority of your time on your business needs to be feeding your family.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. That's a great point. So one of the things that Carrie said that she struggled with, right, was the idea of going and doing the shoot, which she was fine with, but then the fact that she was going to have to come home and spend a lot of time editing those photos. And that's where she was worried about the worth. So can you walk me through your editing workflow? What happens right after you get home from a session?
So right after I get home from a session, it's usually late at night because, you know, sunset sessions, I basically download everything to an external. I back it up and I go to bed. My editing process is I put everything through Lightroom and, that's pretty much it. I mean, from a final session, I will end up with anywhere from 400 to 600 images that I'll cull down to about 125 to 150.
Okay. So when you say that you get home, you back up the files to an external hard drive and then you back that up. What do you mean you back that up? What tools do you use?
I am very, very simple. I have two external hard drives that I back up on. And that is it. Yeah.
Just using like Time Machine or something?
Well, I have Time Machine, but that's for my computer. I don't actually store anything on my computer because computers
can die.
Yeah, they do. They've died on me many times. So I just have two external hard drives. I have one that I store everything on and then one that is just a backup of that storage.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I've played around with like CrashPlan and cloud storage and I haven't really found anything that I love. Mm-hmm. So I'm open to suggestions.
I don't really have any suggestions, as I think that, you know, having a backup strategy is kind of a personal thing, which I don't think a lot of other people think that, but that's kind of how I see it. What works for me will not work for you, and what works for other photographers will not work for me as well. But I started using Backblaze. So I was using CrashPlan for a while, and then I switched to Backblaze because I think CrashPlan just went to like exclusively business, and then they raised their prices. But it's not... The way that I look at it is that it's not like a backup that I can just like access all the time.
Right.
It's like, oh crap, I gotta get that thing. It is really like the last line of defense. Like if my house burns down tomorrow, I just want to make sure that, you know, client work that I'm currently working on and like family photos, like I can retrieve that.
Yeah.
So, but I will say that our internet bill was through the roof and I had no idea that was going to happen because I guess we get like one terabyte of data that we can use a month.
Yeah.
And in that month that it was backing up, I used over 5 terabytes of data. Yeah, so
that happens.
I had to remortgage our house to pay for that internet. But no. But yeah, so like I said, it's a lot. But I had another question for you right there. What do you think are just some general overall challenges that you see a lot of other photographers facing when photographing? Or no, I take that back. What are some challenges that you face when photographing families?
I mean, there's just the standard challenges of every session. It's getting to know someone, making them feel comfortable. Sometimes you run into the situation where, let's just say, I sound like I pick on dads. It's not always dads. But let's just say that it's a dad who is just emotionally unavailable that day and kind of trying to find the in, trying to kind of like break down the walls a little bit, that it's like, I'm not here to judge you. I'm really just here to provide this service for your wife because this is really important to her. Sometimes when it's just a shut down emotional situation, it's a little tricky to work around and those are for me the most emotionally taxing sessions where I am just trying everything I can to make everybody happy and it's not working. It doesn't happen very often anymore. I think that when people go onto my website, they talk to me, they're ready to hire me for a session, they kind of already get a really good sense of who I am and what I'm after. So by the time that the session comes, there's not a whole lot of explanation, right? They kind of know what they're in for. I do a lot of pre-educating on like, we're here to play. Please don't just stand there and smile at me. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it's a lot of pulling that emotion out of them and that vulnerability.
I've witnessed very similar situations when it comes to engagement sessions where she is obviously very excited. She's really looking forward to this. And sometimes the groom-to-be will be a little more emotionally detached.
Right.
So a little trick, if you want to take this do it is that when you show up, like you said, you can kind of get a read for these people, right?
Yeah.
Just mentioning that, like, hey, look, you know, like, I'm trying to think of how to phrase it for like dads and stuff, but essentially just saying like, look, you know, I know that, you know, you're probably feeling like this, like you're going to be stuffy, you know,
yeah,
like you're just going
right.
to be standing there smiling against a camera. And right now, like, just think like what we're going to capture for you, like it's going to be for the kids. Like the kids are going to look right. back at this in a long time and we're going to have yeah. fun. You know, how
yeah.
often do you like truly get to have fun and like enjoy your time with your kids
yeah.
And not be distracted? I guess that wasn't as good of a, I guess it sounded better in my head. I was like, I got this great trick for you. No, that really didn't sound too good.
No,
I'm sure
and
that
I
you
think,
do something very similar.
I think too, like kind of making fun of the situation, like when you're asking the parents, like it's the parents' turn to be all snuggly together. And I'm like, oh, come on. I know you guys are always embracing like this in the middle of
right.
nowhere with your kids, like frolicking in the field nearby, like kind of just like, making fun of this ridiculous situation that we're in. Like, you guys
yeah.
do this all the time. You have kids. I know you kiss.
Yeah.
Like, just stuff like that to kind of break down the barrier a little bit, too.
There you go.
Helps.
Now I feel like a jerk for just trying to, like, hey, here's how you should run your business. Actually, I don't have a good example. It's funny.
That was good.
What I want to know what you think is, you talked there about following. Trying to impress photographers, right, mm-hmm. as something that a lot of newer photographers do. But aside from that, is there any other commonly bad information that you hear being taught to photographers? Or new photographers specifically?
Styled shoots, styled sessions, styling your clients like as the end all be all, like that's not the most important thing that we could be doing as photographers. I think giving styling assistance and helping your mom feel confident in the choices that she's making, you mm-hmm. know, like a lot of people are like, what do we wear? So I do give them access to a styling site that kind of helps them choose outfits and kind of lays something out for them. But at the end of the day, I do not make a really big deal about what they wear. I think if mom feels beautiful in the dress she's wearing, then it is the most perfect dress she could be wearing.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of emphasis in the industry right now has been put on what people are wearing. And
I think that might go back to the trying to please other photographers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people don't just dress you know, the way that they do for photos.
Right.
So when somebody takes it even a step further, I think a lot of photographers get really excited about something like that.
And it's
but
just
you're right.
trying to be the, yeah, trying to just, you know, like you're shooting every single session so that it's going to look good on your Instagram feed or it's going to look good on your website. Every single session isn't going to be the perfect session, right?
So just, I'm living proof of that. Yeah.
You're ultimately there to create for them, and that should be your focus. You should
yeah.
it should never be about the images that you want for yourself.
Love
it. I think, and I've heard the thing, you know, take one for them, take one for me. But to me, they're hiring me because they want to see the way that I see them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So every single image that I'm taking for them is my interpretation of their family. So every single image is for them is kind of
right.
the way that I see it in my mind.
Ah, I see. That, you know what? That's a really interesting way of putting it that I haven't put it as eloquently as you have right there. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. I write that down? Was it good?
No, yeah, that was a really good one. Well, I think what it is like for me, a lot of beginners come and they're like, you know, like what poses should we do? You know,
right.
what this and what that. And it's like, well, it's not as easy as that because
right.
the first thing that I say to every couple when I show up to an engagement session is, look, you know your relationship better than I do. So I'm not going to pose you in like a certain way every single time. I'll give you, you know, a guide,
right.
but I want you to default to whatever's most comfortable to you. Right?
Yes.
Because I want these images for them. I want them to see these images years from now and think like, this is really us. And
yeah.
not, this is how the, you know, the photographer wanted us to stand for 30 minutes while she took our photo or whatever.
Exactly.
And the way that you put it right there was just much much better. It flowed a whole lot easier. So great share, great share.
And I think too, like every prompt or direction that we give is kind of cracking the door to see what is really them, right? So like we're telling them to embrace each other, and we may tell, you know, him to put his hand on her cheek, cup her cheek and give her a kiss. But if that's not like who they are as a couple, that's not going to translate well.
Right.
So it's like you're with every direction you give, you're opening a door to letting them show you who they really are. And you need to give them the space to show you that. So like you just said, like kind of giving them a heads up, like, hey, this is what I'm going to tell you to do, but that's not the final result. Like you do what feels comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That was awesome. That was a cool little, I feel like my brain is like on fire right now. It's really cool. Really cool.
Well, good.
One question that I love to ask, because I always love to hear these answers. Have you ever had an embarrassing moment behind the camera on the job that you would be willing to share?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, like so many, so many.
It's going to be so hard to pick.
The very most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me was second shooting a wedding, and the main photographer had the entire bridal party, the wedding party, and all of the extended parents, everybody, like the whole damn family was there. And she... She was photographing them, so they were facing us, and she asked me to run and get something for her real quick, and I was running. They were obviously all looking at me. I ran and just slipped and fell flat on my face.
Oh, no.
My camera actually, like, over my head, slammed onto the hard ground. Luckily, it was film, like, behemoth, like, nothing happened to that camera.
Right.
It was totally fine. But I was... We just wanted to die. And that was not the most embarrassing part. The most embarrassing part was the most precious, kindest mother of the groom the entire rest of the day kept checking on me to make sure that I was okay and offering me Advil. Like it was a bad spill. Like I was, it was bad. That was the most embarrassing thing.
Well, I'm sure that you just gave hope to a lot of other people out there who will eventually do the same thing, because
you will get through it.
You will get through it. And when you're at a wedding, it's it's understandable. You know, it's understandable to, you know, make a mistake or something like that. So I'm glad that you came out on the other side a stronger human being.
Oh, yeah. You got to roll with it. And you got a good story out of it. So, you know.
Yeah, that you can share with the world on a podcast years later. That's
exactly.
Funny. Sarah, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. You have shared a ton that I know that the listeners are going to truly enjoy and get a lot of value out of this interview with you. Before I let you go, can you share with the listeners where they can find you online?
I'm on Instagram. and I'm also my website, sarahkblanco.com, and Instagram, Sarah K. Blanco Photography.
Perfect. Now, side question before I let you go, is Instagram your favorite social media platform of choice?
Yeah, I think so. I don't love any social media, but yeah, I do dedicate some time to Instagram. I found great friends through Instagram. I will tell you, I don't get a lot of clients from there. I don't get a lot of clients from there. My clients find me online, or they find me through a referral.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you want to connect with Sarah, Instagram is going to be the place to do it. So,
yeah.
Sarah, again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I look forward to keeping up with you and everything that you do in the future.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's interview from the Beginner Photography Podcast Vault. You know, personally, I would love to hear what you took away from this interview. What are you going to implement into your photography that you learned today? Feel free to share what it is and join the conversation in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community. You can find the community by searching Facebook for Beginner Photography Podcast, or if you're driving, there is a link to the group on the homepage at beginnerphotographypodcast.com. Head over there, click the link, and join the Facebook community today. Until next week, remember, the more you shoot today, the better you will be tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.